Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I'm broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And then we send this signal out to WBAI, WPFW in Washington, D.C. Have a lot of wonderful listeners listening right now to PFW, KPFK in Los Angeles. But we have stations all over the world who are carrying us. 55 minutes, and then we continue on for another 5, 6, 7 minutes over the Internet. Today, my guest in the second part of our program will be Jeffrey Smith. Many of you know Jeffrey as being the leading voice opposing GMOs in the United States. What do we do now after California? Well, we're reorganizing. We're working together. We're going to learn the lessons of what went wrong in California so that we can, in Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, try to get legislation that will say, yes, we want our food to be labeled if it's GMO food. So we start all over, but with new tools. And we'll be right on top of all that. Also today, more in-depth discussion on this social issue. The idea that we are losing our freedoms, but the average American seems either unaware or not interested. That concerns me. So today, from Global Research, Truth, Propaganda, and Media Manipulation. Also, Orwellian eavesdropping on a worldwide scale. The United Nations asked for control over the world's internet. And Americans are the most spied on people in world history by Washington blog Global Research. The omissions of mainstream journalism. History in the Unmaking by John Palger from Global Research. These are going to be very insightful. I will have my own commentary on this as well. Also, time permitting, from the environmental segment, Double Your Trouble with Nuclear Power by John Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman. What's wrong with having nuclear energy? Let's begin. We have a lot to share. I've been mentioning for some time now, since it was first brought to our attention by Dr. Bruce Lipton, that epigenetics, meaning epa, the whole environment, and genetics, our genes, are intimately related. Now, what does that mean? Well, in just very simple language, it means that if you eat healthy food, then you're going to end up having a positive epigenetics. If you eat toxic food, you're going to have a negative epigenetics. If you're around good people, positive people, it's positive on your genes. If you're around negative people, bad people, it's negative on your genes. So historically, we never liked to think that it mattered. Example, I can stay positive in a negative environment. I can stay happy in a sad environment. I can stay spiritual in a selfish environment. That's true, but that requires an enormous amount of discipline. More often than not, we become very quickly influenced by the other individual's energy in an environment. This is the latest in the Institute of Food Research. This was done at Newcastle University. I'll quote this. New research in human volunteers has shown that molecular changes to our genes, known as epigenetic markers, are driven mainly by aging, but also affected by what we eat. The study showed that whilst age had the biggest effect on these molecular changes, that the nutrients accumulated from epigenetic changes and also made a difference. Now, in lay language, what exactly does that mean? It means that if you get up in the morning, every morning, and you choose to break your fast, you are fasting for at least 8 hours, probably 12 hours or longer, no food, so you have a breakfast that is healthy. With intent, it is healthy. You want to be healthier, and you select healthy items. That corresponds by strengthening your whole epigenetic system. Your genes are healthier. They're going to live longer. You're going to be younger longer than someone who doesn't do that, who gets up, eats your normal garbage breakfast. You're going to have a big advantage as far as how you look, how you feel, and most importantly, how young your cells are. Also, from our science area, published in the peer-reviewed journal Advances Nutrition, this is reported from Science Daily. Some very important research on rice bran. Now, most people don't use rice bran. Most people use a wheat bran. But rice bran is much better, in my opinion. This is at the University of Colorado Cancer Center. In this test, rice bran reduced the incidence of cancer. I'll quote this. New research from the University of Colorado Cancer Center, published in Advances in Nutrition, show that rice bran offers promising cancer preventative properties. Quote, while I have been trained as a molecular toxicologist, I'm excited about the opportunities to deliver bioactive, cancer-fighting compounds with food, and this has led me to focus my attention primarily on the multiple drug-like characteristics of rice bran. That's according to Dr. Elizabeth Ryan, who ran the test, and she found that it worked. So they may not know all the reasons why it works, but rice bran. And I suggest brown rice bran or organic brown rice bran. Now, if you have a problem with your metabolism, and almost all men and women, men once they go through andropause, which is generally in their late 40s, early 50s, you start to see your skin change, your musculature shrink, you begin to stoop a bit, you don't have the same vitality. If you're the average person, in a woman, she gains weight anywhere from 10 to 15 pounds, and her energy sags. She can't get a good night's sleep. Her hair begins to thin in clumps frequently. Her eyebrows thin. These are all due to metabolic changes because of hormonal changes because of the slowing down process. Here's something that can help. From the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, done at the University of Ulsan and Seoul National Universities in South Korea and Kyoto University in Japan. Pine nut oil. Quote, this is impacting metabolic benefits. And it talked about how pine nut oil made all the change in the world, and that could help your metabolism, that could help you lose weight. And that's important. Quote, these metabolic changes lead to a reduction in muscle lipid content and body weight gain. Pine nut oil has potential as a dietary supplement for preventing obesity and metabolic dysregulation in skeletal muscles and brown fat tissue, end quote. Pine nuts are very tasty. They're really best if you lightly dehydrate them, about 100, just get a home, I'm assuming most of you have a home dehydrator. You really should. That way nothing goes bad. For example, I haven't been to my home in quite some time. I'm looking forward to it, getting back next month. And it'll be time for mulberries. And I have this huge mulberry tree, probably about 50 feet high and 70 feet across. It's gigantic. And these very big mulberries come. And, of course, there's only so many mulberries you can eat. I eat a lot, about a quart at a time. And they're purple, and then a dark, dark purple. But I can't eat them all, because buckets, I mean, you know, whole bushel baskets a day I can pick. And, of course, the donkeys like them, so they eat all the low-hanging ones. And then the birds like them, but the monkeys love them. And I still have probably 5 bushels left over, so what do I do? Well, it's simple. I go in, I wash them off, I let them dry, and then I put them on a little trays, and I put them in the dehydrator at about 100 degrees. It overnight dehydrates them. In the morning, they're dry, and I put them in a bag, and then I put more on, and within all 3 or 4 days, I've not wasted a single mulberry, and now I have a whole gallon bag full of mulberries. I Ziploc it, and I put it in the fridge. Or I put it in the freezer. It'll last forever. You can do the same thing with tomatoes. You can dry tomatoes and peppers and string beans. You can try most things. Citrus, no, but certainly apples, plums, pears, peaches, nectarines, easy to dry. Starfruit, easy to dry. So get yourself a dehydrator. Now, the pine nut, you do the same thing, but here's what you do. You make a little powder, and you put your favorite seasonings in it, like pink Himalayan sea salt, that's always good. Some ground pepper, which also has pepperine in it, which is great for your body and immune system, and gives it a nice taste. If you want it more spicy, you can grind up some red peppers or jalapeno peppers. And then it depends upon your taste. You want something more curry, more tropical. That's the seasoning you use. But then you mix all that in the dried, into the dried pine nuts, and then you put those on your salads. Delicious condiment to your salads. You can, in the health food store now, find cold-pressed pine nut oil. It's a little expensive, but pine nuts are expensive. But this is good, especially as there's good science supporting its health benefits. I mentioned 2 days ago why we should be very conscientious if we're vegans or if we're not consuming animal proteins to make sure we get our vitamin B12. Also, if you're over the age of 50, you absolutely have to make sure you get B12 because it's so essential in your brain chemistry and in the energy of your brain. This is the latest from Science Daily. It's from the Nutrition Epidemiological Program at Tufts University. And here's what it says. Being, quote, mildly B12 deficient could be an indication that some older adults are at a greater risk of accelerated cognitive decline. So what that means is, and this was published in the Journal of American Geriatric Society, it means that you need B12. I'm suggesting 500 micrograms to a milligram of methylated B12 a day. If you have heart disease, you need more. You have to really get a blood chemistry to tell DHEA, B12, homocysteine, C-reactive protein. But make sure you get your B12. You also have more energy. And to help your hearts, a healthy diet makes a difference. This is from McMaster University, published in the American Heart Association Journal Circulation, and it says a healthy diet protects against recurrent heart attacks and strokes. Quote, at times, patients don't think they need to follow a healthy diet since their medications have already lowered their blood pressure and cholesterol. That is wrong. Dietary modification has benefits in addition to those seen with aspirin. And, end quote. They looked at 31,000 adults who had cardiovascular disease or damage to major organs, and then they found that the diet was all important. For example, here's a healthy diet. With a healthy diet, you have a 35% reduced risk of cardiovascular death, 28% reduced risk of congestive heart failure, 19% reduced risk of stroke, and 14% risk of a heart attack, a new heart attack. Now, mind you, that's with a normal, healthy diet. That is not the kind of diet many of you or I consume. Our diet would be several measures better. Organic, meaning no GMOs, local produce to make it fresher in season, and also with supplemented with juices to give a concentration of healing nutrients, and, of course, supplements. So then you should have no reason to be at risk of heart attacks or stroke at all. Now, one of the nutrients that makes a big difference in our body is magnesium. And for those suffering from tension during a day or maybe physical exertion, athletics will do that, you really need extra magnesium because it relaxes the muscles. I can't tell you how many people have said, Gary, I have trouble, I have tightness in my back, or I have lower back pain, and you suggest 1,000 milligrams of magnesium citrate, and they say, gee whiz, it worked really fast. This is from Sayer G. from Green Med Info, and he's talking about magnesium is more important than what most people had assumed. I'll quote this. New research published in the Journal of BMC Bioinformatics indicates that magnesium's role in human health and disease is far more significant and complicated than previously imagined. While it is well known that all living things require magnesium and that it's found in over 300 enzymes in the human body, including those enzymes utilized or synthesizing ATP, a molecule unit of currency for energy transfer, new study entitled 3,751 Magnesium Binding Sites Have Been Detected on Human Proteins indicates that a deficiency of magnesium may profoundly affect far wider range of biological structures than previously understood. And then it goes and talk about all the different ways that it helps us. It shows that it benefits people with fibromyalgia, atrial fibrillation. Quote, a number of studies now exist showing that magnesium supplementation reduces atrial fibrillation, either by itself or in combination with conventional drugs. Diabetes type 2. Magnesium deficiency is common in type 2 diabetics. Premenstrual syndrome. Cardiovascular disease and death. Migraine disorders and aging. And of course, the best sources of magnesium from our diet would be rice bran. Just a single 3-ounce serving gives you 780 milligrams. And then seaweed and chives and then pumpkin seeds and coca powder, which is the unsweetened type, 500 milligrams. Flaxseed, Brazil nuts, parsley, almond butter, cashews, bananas, millet, shallots, leeks, all of those, and onions, and kale, all give a great source of, and of course supplements, of that. Now, I mentioned that a drink that I suggest you have each day is starting your day with a, at some point in the beginning of a day, with celery and cucumber, apple, and lemon. And I always suggest use the whole lemon. And even build up to where you can use 2 or 3 lemons. Here's the latest on the lemon. And this is from Ethan Evers from Natural News. This is a study that showed that, quote, natural lemon extract is cytotoxic to breast cancer cells. I'll quote this. A new study has shown for the first time how limonoids, natural compounds present in lemons and other citrus fruits, impede both ER plus and ER negative breast cancer cell growth. This sheds new light on the importance of citrus fruit for breast cancer prevention and supports past studies which showed fruit consumption may lower breast cancer risk. Now, in this study, 14 kilograms of dried lemon seed were powdered and defatted. 9 different limonoids were extracted from the seeds. And this is, then it was shown that they had a cytotoxic impact, on, meaning they killed breast cancer cells. So, definitely something to use on a regular basis. And of course, you could just have, you could have fresh orange juice with lemon in it. You could have grapefruit juice with lemon in it. And if it's fresh lemon juice, and just put Manuka honey in it to sweeten it up. And then you get something really good. And finally, increase your energy by supporting your thyroid and adrenals. And what this article shows in the literature is that to increase your energy naturally, not with caffeine and not with some drug, is you have to rebuild. And they talk about rejuvenate yourself by relaxing, because chronic stress drains you of energy. And then exercise, but don't overdo it, because about 45 minutes of exercise a day really enhances your overall energy. Then eat a healthy diet, and then take some supplements, including zinc, vitamin A, and selenium. And I would add a few things onto that. I would say NADH, the supplement, 20 milligrams, 4 times a day. Coenzyme Q10, 200 milligrams of high bioavailable Q10, Q10 four times a day, L-carnitine 1,000 milligrams twice a day, and that will enhance energy substantially. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Like the tick, tick, tock of a stately clock as it stands against the wall. Like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrops when the summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating you, 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 night and day. You are the one. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to our issue segment of our program and then open our calls up for talkback, and then we'll have our guest, Jeffrey Smith, on, talking about where do we go from here with our GMOs. First up, this is about from Glenn Greenwald, and he has this to say. This is important because when the White House was looking for someone to represent the public interest in the Obama health care legislation, we provided 20 names and their backgrounds. None were selected. But the person who was selected, Max Baucus, selected all pro major corporate people, all of them, to testify. Of course, the media only focuses upon who testifies, not who didn't. Hence, that's the only message they have to work with. So they planted the message they wanted. Now, here's what Glenn Greenwald has to say. Obama healthcare architect leaves White House for pharmaceutical industry job. Few people embody the corporatist revolving door greasing Washington as purely as Elizabeth Fowler. Quote, when the legislation that became known as Obamacare was first drafted, the key legislator was the Democratic chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Max Baucus, whose committee took the lead in drafting the legislation. As Baucus himself repeatedly boasted, the architect of that legislation was Elizabeth Fowler, his chief health policy counsel. Indeed, as Marcy Wheeler discovered, it was Fowler who actually drafted it. As Politico put it at the time, quote, if you drew an organizational chart of major players in the Senate health care negotiations, Fowler would be the chief operating officer. What was most amazing about all that was that before joining Baucus's office as the point person for the health care bill, Fowler was the vice president for public policy and external affairs, meaning an informed lobbying, at WellPoint, the nation's largest health insurance provider. Before going to WellPoint, as well as after, Fowler had worked as Baucus's top health care aide. And when that health care bill was drafted, the person whom Fowler replaced as chief health counsel in Baucus's office, Michelle Easton, was lobbying for WellPoint as a principal at Tarplin, Downs, and Young. Whatever one's views on Obamacare were and are, the bill's mandate that everyone purchase the products of a private health insurance industry accompanied by any public alternative was a huge gift to that industry. As Wheeler wrote at the time, quote, to the extent that Elizabeth Fowler is the author of this document, we might as well consider WellPoint its author as well, end quote. Now, more amazingly still, when Obama's White House needed someone to oversee implementation of Obamacare after the bill passed, it chose Elizabeth Fowler. That the White House would put a former health insurance industry executive lobbyist in charge of implementation of its new massive health care law was roundly condemned by good government groups as at least a violation of the spirit of governing ethics rules, and even gross, but those objections were, of course, brushed aside by the White House. She then became Special Assistant to the President for Healthcare and Economic Policy at the National Economic Council. Now, as Politico's Influence column briefly noted yesterday, Fowler is once again passing through the deeply corrupting revolving door as she leaves the Obama administration to return to the loving and lucrative arms of the private health care industry. Quote, Elizabeth Fowler is leaving the White House for a senior-level position leading global health policy at Johnson & Johnson Government Affairs and Policy Group. The pharmaceutical giant just hired Fowler, actively supported the passage of Obamacare through its membership in the Pharmaceutical Research Manufacturers of America's lobby. Indeed, it was that lobby was one of the most aggressive supporters, most lavish beneficiaries of the health care bill drafted by Fowler. Mother Jones's James Ridgway proclaimed, quote, Big Pharma the big winner in the health care bill. Now, we could show you that almost every single agency, the CDC, the FDA, USDA, when people who are at the very top, who are all political appointees, they're always, without exception, coming to represent the interests of special corporate major players. They get done the good work on their behalf and go right back to multi-million dollar jobs. What does it say about the public? The public has been abused and manipulated all the time, every day. Now that leads me to this. The mainstream media is the most obvious in its inherent bias and manipulation. Now, I'm going to share some thoughts of my own and global research because I believe that the American public is most vulnerable when it is propagandized. And almost everything that we get is propaganda and bias, either from the left or right. But it's always serving the same relatively small cabal of corporate elites. And unless we continue to show a light on this, we'll forget who really benefits from the choices we make, even from our crisis. The mainstream media is owned directly by large multinational corporations, and through their boards of directors that are connected with a plethora of other major global corporations and elite interest. Let me just give you an example. Let's just take one. Time Warner. Now, Time Warner owns Time Magazine. Oh, gee whiz. Who was just featured in there talking about why organic food was no good? And who was just featured in there showing that GMO food was just fine and eating the meat and factory farm food was just fine? Well, Dr. Oz. And so here we have a major magazine that is read by a lot of people. Plus, you have HBO. Now, have you seen any really hard-hitting documentaries on HBO? Have you seen the kind of issues that would change public policy and the public mind? No. No, they go through filters. You see those documentaries that are maybe interesting, but are non-threatening. And then you have CNN. What a sellout that organization has been. And I'll tell you about how much they've sold out in a moment. The board of directors includes individuals on Time Warner who are presently affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the International Monetary Fund, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Warburg Pincus Fund, the Philip Morris and AMR Corporation, among others. So it's an elite who's who of global entrepreneurs. Now, there's nothing illegal about that, but it is ethically so disturbing that people who were never elected have that much control over what's going to get into the public, either through television, radio, or print. Two of the most so-called esteemed sources of news in the United States are the New York Times and the Washington Post. Well, did you ever take a look at the New York Times board? These are the people, past and present, affiliated, sharing Plough, the enormous pharmaceutical company that's been caught so many times, paid so many fines. John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, Chevron, Wesco Financial, Kohlberg & Company, the Charles Schwab Company, eBay, Xerox, IBM, Ford Motor Company, Eli Lilly, among others. Well, that's not a group of impartial people. And the same could be said for the Washington Post, which has on its board Lee Bollinger, the president of Columbia University and chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor and chairman and CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, and individuals associated with Coca-Cola, New York University, and Conservation International, and the Council on Foreign Relations, and Xerox, and Johnson & Johnson and Target and Rand Corporation and General Motors and the Business Council. Well, that's all a group of very powerful business people. Therefore, they will have what is in their interest and the business corporation's interest first and foremost. It's also important to address how the mainstream media is intertwined, often covertly and secretly, with the government. Now, here's where, for those of you who believe as Keith Olbermann has said repeatedly, he's not into conspiracy. Well, he should be, because conspiracies exist. A lot of conspiracies exist. Set aside any of the absurd ones, just look at the real ones. For example, Carl Bernstein, one of the two Washington Post reporters who covered the Watergate scandal, revealed that there were over 400 American journalists who were, quote, this is from Carl Bernstein of the Washington Post, secretly carried out assignments for the CIA. Now, interestingly, quote, the use of journalists has been among the most productive means of intelligence gathering employed by the CIA, end quote. Now, among the organizations which cooperated with the CIA and therefore had its own CIA operatives disguised as journalists and reporting around the world included ABC Network, the NBC Network, the Associated Press, UPI, Reuters, Hearst Newspaper, Scripps Howard, Newsweek Magazine, the Mutual Broadcasting System, the Miami Herald, and by far the most valuable of these associations to the CIA officials has been the New York Times and the CBS and Time Inc. So now we have an association, direct and authentic, completely proven, between the CIA and Time, the CIA and the New York Times, the CIA and CBS. So then how objective could the news be? Well, I'll tell you how objective. Quote, this is from the CIA. This is from a training manual they had. Quote, to teach agents to be journalists who were then placed in major news organizations with help from management, meaning the CIA's top brass got its spies into major organizations with the full knowledge and cooperation acceptance of the New York Times, CBS, and Time Warner. Well, then what can happen from there? Well, these types of relationships have continued into decades. And, for example, it was revealed that the NATO bombing of Kosovo, quote, several officers from the U.S. Army's 4th Psychological Operations Group at Fort Bragg worked in the news division at CNN's Atlanta headquarters, end quote. This same Army PSYOP outfit had, quote, planted stories in U.S. media supporting the Reagan administration's Central American policies, end quote, which was described by the Miami Herald as a, quote, vast, this is a quote from the Miami Herald, a vast psychological warfare operation of the kind the military conducts to influence a population in enemy territory, end quote. So let me get this right. These Army PSYOP officers also worked at NPR, you know, Wonder Bread for the Mind. National Public Radio was allowing itself to be used as a propaganda tool by the Army and intelligence. And the U.S. Army also has a strong relationship with CNN. So, in 2008, it was reported that the Pentagon ran a major propaganda campaign by using retired generals and former Pentagon officials to present a good picture of the administration's wartime policies. The program started in the lead-up to the Iraq War in 2003 and continued. And these officials presented, quote, military analysts, and all they would do is regurgitate government talking points and often sit on the boards of military contractors, thus having a vested interest in the subjects they were brought on to analyze. And the major philanthropic foundations in the United States have often used their enormous wealth to co-opt voices of dissent and movements of resistance into channels that are safe for the powers to be. As McGeorge Bundy, former president of the Ford Foundation, once said, quote, everything the Ford Foundation does is to make the world safe for capitalism, end quote. Examples of this include the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. They provide enormous organizational and financial support to NGO organizations, including in the alternative media, by the way. So that shows you that you cannot just assume that whatever you're seeing or hearing is fair and objective. For example, repeatedly, when I see a lieutenant or a lieutenant colonel or a major or a major general on Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or on the left as well, on Oberman, I know that they're there purely as a propagandist. They have been selected. They're being paid. They're propagandists. And yet they're never challenged. No one says, how much money do you receive directly or indirectly through stipends, royalties, fees, research on someone's board of directors to make the statements you're making? There is no objectivity. There's no accuracy. Just bias. But then again, if you see the same person over and over again, then you realize how easy it was to switch America from being anti-war to pro-war going into Iraq. And yet these same people who lied and were wrong about everything are invited back again and again and again. Same people told us we have to go in to Iraq, told us we have to go into Libya, and we have to go into Syria. These are all pathologically dysfunctional people, but they're perfect at what they do. They're master manipulators. And the trouble is the American public doesn't understand the difference. And that gets us to the idea that we are a free society. We are not free in the way that we should be. Yeah, we're free to do what we want. We can eat the food we want, but then we're propagandized. You don't see commercials ever on television for healthy food. You see commercials for alcohol, for medications, for over-the-counter medications, and you're never told by taking that aspirin to prevent a stroke that you're going to have 24,000 Americans die from taking the aspirin from bleeding. And also many more die because of heart attacks, because it destroyed folic acid B6, B12, which then raises your homocysteine level, which makes you more vulnerable to AFib and a heart attack. You never see the truth. You see meals that are junk food meals promoted constantly. So, yeah, we have a corporate freedom to manipulate the public, but there's no counterbalancing. But we are listened to. At a conference in Dubai this week, the ITU members, the United Nations International Telecommunications Union, decided to adopt a Y2770 standard for deep pocket inspection, a top secret proposal by way of China that would allow telecom companies across the world to move easily to dig through data and pass it across the web. And that's just one more way that they're wanting to catch everything that is said so they can use it. Now, here's the most serious part of my discussion. In a radio interview, the Wall Street Journal reporter Julia Agwin, who's been one of the best at covering the surveillance state in the United States, made a simple observation that puts much of this into context. According to Global Washington blog, she said, quote, "The United States surveillance regime has more data on the average American than the East German police state Stasi ever did on East Germans." Well, indeed, the American government has more information on the average American than Stalin had on the Russians, Hitler had on the German citizens, Mao had on the Chinese, or any other government has had on its people. The American government, right now, is collecting and storing virtually every phone call, purchase, email, text message, internet search, social media communications, health information, employment history, travel and student records, and virtually all other information of every American. Some also claim that the government is also using facial recognition software and surveillance cameras to track where every American is going, and giving your smartphone routinely sends you location information back to Google or Apple. It would be child's play for the government to track your location that way. As the top spy chief at the U.S. National Security Agency explained this week, the American government is collecting some 100 billion 1,000-character emails per day and 20 trillion communications of all types every year. He says the government has collected all the communications of all congressional leaders, generals, and everyone else in the United States for the past 10 years. He further explains that he set up the National Security Agency system said all the information would automatically be encrypted, so the government had to obtain a search warrant based upon probable cause before particular suspects' communications could be decrypted. But the National Security Agency now collects all data in an unencrypted form so that no probable cause is needed to view any citizen's information. And he says that if anyone gets on the government's enemies list, then the stored information will be used to target them. Specifically, he notes that if the government decides it doesn't like someone, it analyzes all the data it has collected on that person and his her associates over the last 10 years to build a case against them. And as we have said many times, the spying is not being done to keep us safe, but to crush dissent and to smear people who uncover the truth about our government and too-big-to-fail businesses. And this didn't start after post 9/11. It's been going on long before that. It was the Senator Frank Church who chaired the famous Church Committee into the unlawful FBI COINTEL program and who chaired the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. In 1975, he said the National Security Agency's capability at any time could be turned around on the American people and no American would have any privacy left, such as the capability to monitor everything, telephone, conversations, telegrams, it doesn't matter. There'd be no place to hide. Well, that has happened. So when I suggest that we are a police state, we have a totalitarian fascist government, that I do not respect any of the politicians, that I believe that we, the people, must understand what is against us, or we will have no future, unless, of course, it will never be a problem if you just want to eat like a pig, feed your kid the same crap that you eat, give your kid the same kind of special privileges that you believe that spoiled you and spoiled them, making them non-functional citizens. Take the medication your doctor suggests or medical procedure without ever questioning, even if there's no science to support its efficacy and actual science to support its harm. Can continue to support the banks that despise you and look at you as the lowest form of human denominator, but when they fail, they're bailed out by you. But when you can't pay a mortgage, you're kicked out of your house and you still owe your mortgage or you'll go to jail, who don't want to have a single payment missed of exploitive and usurious interest rates by your kids who can't find a job on their student loan. Yeah, you can continue living that life. Just understand that at the end of the day, when you finally come up out of this hubris stupor you've been living in, you're the problem. The 99% is the problem, because without the 99%'s absolute complicity, there wouldn't be a 1%. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. At the end of this broadcast today, on our 55 minutes, you can continue listening over the telephone. And by the way, yesterday I was told 12,000 people listened over the telephone. So 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And here is what some of you had to say about one of our social postings. Each day is a part of our program. I do health and nutrition, environmental issues, and social issues. Right now, on our website, on my Facebook, and on Progressive Radio Network, we have these issues: challenging the health of sugar in any form, and the people behind the sugar lobby, and the corporate interests, and how they manipulated for decades the science and doctors, how they controlled the whole apparatus to make us believe that sugar was okay. They're apologists. Plus my article on sugar, and my direct challenge to PBS is the Washington, D.C. president of their local station board. Her name is Rockefeller, and Sharon Rockefeller, and she's on the board of Pepsi-Cola, one of the largest users of high fructose, and her association with the Sugar Institute. All that is one. Separately, on GMOs, all the best articles, that's two. Third, challenging the cancer paradigm with over 2,600 of the leading dissident scientific voices who say what we're doing is not right, not working, we've got to change. That's another one. These are all there. But when we went after Dr. Oz to offer him a way to walk back his irresponsible statements, many of you had this to say.
Hi, this is Casey with your daily TalkBack tweets and Facebook comments. The following are your responses to the open letter to Dr. Oz regarding his stance on GMOs. From Morgan, I read that the oh-so-phony and clearly bought Dr. Oz has an article in the recent Time magazine that reveals who he really is. He should be run off the air. GMOs are just the tip of the iceberg with regard to this guy. Need to add that he's clearly reversed his opinion on many positive healthy choices he's promoted in the past. That's why I would imagine he's been bought. From Mary, it's a disgrace, and Oz is a disappointment. From Maureen, obviously he has sold his soul. Monsanto might not have given him much choice, as they can be very persuasive. From Michael, we have to all collectively stop watching his show. From Anna, well done, Gary. Dr. Oz should follow that yellow brick road and disappear. From Reggie, love it. I love how you suggest to get info from his wife. I wonder if he will respond. I doubt it, sadly. From Barbie, well said. From Ola, no more Dr. Oz for me. Bought and sold. To talk back online, tweet at @PRN_radio or comment at facebook.com/PRNFM.
And I, those are, I don't read any of that, but those who do send in, we're going to have a regular update on all the important issues so you have a chance to have your voice heard. Jeffrey Smith is on the line now. We're going to hear what he has to say. Jeffrey is one of the foremost experts on the health and environmental risk of genetically modified organisms, commonly known as GMO crops and foods. And he's a leading watchdog over corporate agricultural industry's manipulation of GMO genetic science and public opinion. And he's currently the founding director for the Institute for Responsible Technology. And he's the author of two critical books, GMO Seeds of Deception and more recently Genetic Roulette. And he also did a documentary on the same topic, Genetic Roulette. Nice to have you with us today, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much, Gary. Great to be here.
Well, the big premiere is tonight. We're sold out here in New York at a major theater on the Upper West Side. And then Sunday, I believe we're sold out at the Huntington Arts, the two places we're going to premiere the film. You're prominently in it. Jeremy, let's take a step back. And for those who are coming to the air for the first time, thousands do every single day. Tell us why you're concerned about GMOs in the food, why the government has not been there to protect us, and what we need to do in order to become a part of this whole effort to get our GMO foods labeled.
Well, that's a big question, or a number of them. I think that we can start with the second one about the government, because that sort of lays the foundation for the deception that has occurred. The scientists at the Food and Drug Administration repeatedly warned their superiors about the dangers of GMOs, calling for detailed, rigorous, long-term safety studies. But the person in charge of policy at the FDA was the former attorney to Monsanto, later Monsanto's vice president, now the U.S. Food Safety Czar, and his policy falsely claimed that the agency wasn't aware of information showing that GMOs were different, and on the basis of that lie, said no testing or labeling was necessary. Now, 20 years later, after that policy was enacted, there's overwhelming evidence that the scientists at the FDA were correct and that GMOs are, in fact, dangerous. We can talk about the numerous lab animals that have suffered from immune system problems, accelerated aging, organ damage, reproductive disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, the massive multiple tumors, etc., which I do extensively in my books and movies. But I want to share more recent information that's come upon us this year, which is quite significant, and I think hits home for people more than simply a recounting of all of the damage to virtually every organ and every system studied in lab animals. There's a doctor's organization, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, which in 2009 urged all doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets to every patient based on these lab animal results. And we now have thousands of doctors doing just that. They prescribe non-GMO diets, and then we try to speak to the doctors and to the patients and find out what's different. And it's not only those in the doctor's offices that I have interviewed, but all those in audiences around the country where I now actually ask audiences how many have switched to non-GMO eating and what symptoms have you noticed have gone away or improved. And we've also solicited people to email us at healthier@responsibletechnology.org with their case studies. And we now have hundreds and hundreds of people describing personal experiences of switching from GM-laden diets to non-GM diets and improving on a variety of symptoms that are simply breathtaking, from acne and ulcerated skin to infertility, asthma, allergies. One person said when switching to a non-GMO diet, her 4-year-old spoke for the first time. Someone was infertile for 4 years, switched to non-GMO, 3 weeks later got pregnant. People saying that their diabetes went away, their high blood pressure went away, depression, anxiety, lethargy, mental fog, a huge host of gastrointestinal disorders, erectile dysfunction, all sorts of things. But if you talk to them, now here's an interesting thing, Gary. As an investigator, both you and I would look at this and say, well, certainly there are some very powerful evidence here, but can we isolate the cause? Because when someone gets rid of GMOs because they're not labeled, they typically have to build a strategy. And one of the key components of their strategy is to switch to organic food. And organic is not just non-GMO, it's also healthier because it has very few of the toxic pesticides or herbicides, and it has higher antioxidants and higher amounts of minerals and nutrition. They also might reduce their intake of processed foods. And, of course, processed foods have so much depletion and other additives that are a problem. So there's a question about the cofactors when humans get rid of GMOs. But when we look at the livestock that are taken off of a GM soy or corn diet and put on non-GM soy or corn, there are no cofactors. The only change in the animal's diet is the switching from GM to non-GM in these one or two components. And they, too, are getting better along these same lines of gastrointestinal, reproductive, immune system problems, organ damage, etc. And the results are stunning and dramatic. Pigs taken off of genetically modified soy, they were suffering from massive diarrhea that was fatal. Within 2 days, no more diarrhea. There was elimination of birth defects, an elimination of deaths from ulcers, increased conception rate, increased litter size. Another group of pigs were taken off of GM corn. Their behavior immediately improved, and their medicine use dropped dramatically, so the infectious diseases were less. 5,000 head cattle operation. He didn't realize it until he switched to non-GM corn, but the more he was feeding the GM corn to the cattle, the more deaths he would have, and pneumonia, etc. So if you look at the livestock and you look at the categories of diseases that they are improving from, they're the same categories of diseases that are being reported as improving in the humans that eliminate GMOs, the same categories of diseases that the American Academy of Environmental Medicine had identified in the lab animals as suffered when they were fed GMOs.
It's a tremendous amount of information you have. Jeffrey Smith, thank you for coming on, giving us a little newsmaker update on what's current. And anyone who would like to participate, go to responsibletechnology.org. That's the website. Genetic Roulette is the book and the documentary. Jeffrey Smith, thank you very much, Jeffrey. We'll send you out a copy of the film that you're in tomorrow. And that brings us up to the end of our 55-minute program. If you'd like to continue, I'm going to take calls now. Our lines are open, 888-874-4888. You can go to the telephone and listen at 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066, or listen over ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And by the way, I look forward, since we're filled up tonight, I look forward to being out this Sunday on the 9th at 2 p.m. at Long Island Cinema Arts Center on Park Avenue, at 2 p.m. and for premiering the same film there as well. And I've had 7 straight sold-out theater in the last 2 years there. So looking forward to that this Sunday. And that number there is 1-800-838-3006. 1-800-838-3006. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I like that little segment about the feedback, the Twitter feedback. That was great. I have an email here from someone named Brian. And he says his father was a writer, and he knew you in the 70s. You used to hang out together, and he used to talk about how you'd never really spend a lot of money on yourself, and you lived in a tiny one-room apartment on West End Avenue. He said that your friendship ended when you had a conversation with him and told him that he needed to take more control of his life and his career because you told him, according to him, that he wasn't planning for the worst-case scenario. Well, he didn't appreciate it. And recently we had a conversation, and he brought this up. While we were watching you on TV, my dad said that, you know, I should have listened to him. He was a good friend and the only one who saw what was coming and warned me. And my own arrogance prevented me from seeing. And I never spoke to him again. My father lost everything, his marriage, his condo, and his career. He ended up driving a school bus. And Brian asked, could you take a few moments and talk about what it means to take control of your career? And one of the things he said that you told him that we should never take success for granted. And that he says there must be thousands of people in your audience who must be writers, artists, and other creative types who work hard to become successful. And if they do, they don't know what to do with the success or the failure when it comes. From what we can see from your bio and all we see on your video bios, which we really appreciate, you have achieved success in 9 different fields, and you're on top with all of them. How in the hell is that possible for all these decades? He said, I promised my father I'd send him the program where you mentioned this. I will not mention his name, but I'm sure you will remember who I am speaking of.
Yes, I remember. I even remember the day that he and I had a conversation. He was a very good friend, and he had published, I believe, about 6 books, novels, and he was what is called an editor's writer, meaning he had a friend at a publishing company that would give him, at that time, a very high advance. It was $10,000. And so he would knock out these books. He wasn't a great writer, but he was certainly creative. And what happened was that I lived in a little tiny apartment, a little tiny. I was so small that my kitchen and bathtub were in the same room. Literally, a little tiny bathtub in the middle of a brownstone on the bottom floor. I just had one room. And he lived next door, and then he in a nicer apartment. But then he moved to a co-op, and that was a big deal. I mean, a real big deal. And one day, I just had some intuition and an insight. We went for a walk, and as we were sitting, I said, "I'd like to share some of my thoughts and see what you think." And he said, "Fine." And I said, "You're able to publish because you have an inside relationship with an editor. And there are a lot of others the same way. I know a lot of other writers who, because of their relationship, can publish even if they're not marketable, even if they're not selling a lot of books, because the editor had absolute discretion to say yes or no to a book." That's not true today, by the way. And I said, "So what's going to happen when that person leaves the firm, retires, or is fired? Or what's going to happen when the firm changes policy and they're only going to allow another book if you're selling enough to justify it? And then what are you going to do with your mortgages and your lifestyle? Have you thought about that?" And he looked at me and says, "What, are you jealous?" And I said, "I'm not jealous of you. I support my friend's successes. I'm just concerned that you haven't considered what would happen if this gravy train stops." And he said, "Well, it's not going to stop." And he got really angry at me and he walked away. That was the last time he ever spoke with me. He wouldn't take my phone calls or anything. And I felt, and I remember once, oh, it was 10 years ago, I was driving back up to my old farm upstate on Stone Ridge Road, or Buck Road in Stone Ridge. And as I was exiting the road, on the right-hand side, I saw him. And I saw him, he had a beard, and I rolled down the window, and I yelled his name and waved, and he kind of looked. I don't know if he recognized me or not, but he turned and walked in the house. We don't have any way in the United States to encourage people of how not to take success seriously, and that it's really an illusion. What you should do is try to have some control over your life and realize that your success should not be measured by how you can commercialize or materialize its benefits, but rather, if anything, to come from a more humble and a more austere mindset that says, if for some reason, at some point in my life, with my art or my dance or my sculpting or writing or whatever it may be that you're doing, if I become successful, I should become even more humble because none of this is sustainable, and that therefore I should not immediately indebt myself and create a high debt to support my success. Then means I have to be even more successful to pay for more debt and more successful, and until the day comes when all you're doing with every project is you have no idea that the project is aesthetically important or spiritually important or creatively important. You're doing it to pay debt. How many times have we seen actors in movies that were just stinkers? And you ask, why did that actor? For the money. They had bills, and they had to pay the bills, so they don't think about, will the audience forgive me or like me or not? And that's unfortunate because that really shows a betrayal to that person, to their audience. At the end of the day, we're not going to remember you because of your fame. We'll remember you because you were either a nice person or not a nice person, a loving person or a selfish person. All the things that you thought were so important, you indebted to yourself, and you leveraged your success, momentary, temporary, transient, as it is in everyone, for that. That's unfortunate. I do not believe that we should be living through debt. And hence, I've just chosen not to. If I couldn't afford to pay for something, I didn't buy it. It's just that simple. It never made me less of a human being, and I've never missed anything that was important to me because of that. As a result, then you can choose your project, you can take your time, you don't have to ascend to some social level of acceptance, and that's what a lot of people do, and there's a lot of enablers that surround them to say yes at every opportunity. I see it in radio personalities who get the big gig and don't realize how quickly those ratings can turn against you, but they build a lifestyle and now they don't want to deaccelerate that. So just, you know, look for things that give you real joy and happiness, quality relationships, happy, healthy times, enjoying free time. I think the most important thing we can have in life is more free time, because then we can enjoy the world we are in and ourselves in it and others in it. Otherwise, we're working nonstop for some artificial means to live in some artificial environment, none of which is conducive to our long-term health and survival. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Alton. No, excuse me, to Yatrice Lead, who's got Alton on as a guest.
Yes. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Yatrice. I thought he was on yesterday.
Yes, we are continuing the discussion today.
Excellent.
So today's part two.
Well, we look forward to it, and I will send you a copy tomorrow of our new documentary on Seeds of Death. So you can watch it, and we're looking also for it. I've got a lot of feedback of people who are waiting for you to come to New York so you can do a lecture.
Well, I place myself in your capable hands. We're going to talk about it.
Excellent.
I have to figure out how we're going to do that.
Jog to New York.
Sure.
That and other fantasies coming in a moment. Please stay with us.
The way you sip your tea.